When they give us that inch, that bump stock ban, we will take a mile.
Just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
And there you have the left grasp of firearms in a nutshell. They don't like them, and they don't want you to have them. Why? It's hard to take over a country when the populace is armed to the teeth. Hi there, it's the Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. You've got me, little old Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you're having a great day. We're getting close to the weekend. We're just a day away. You can actually smell the weekend from here, and it's smelling pretty sweet where I am. Got a great forecast, no rain until Sunday. It's going to be nice. Looking forward to some time out, some time away, a little time to get quiet, and to have a few laughs with some friends. And that's important. I hope your weekend has some of that going on. It's very, very important. How you doing today? You all right? I hope you are. I hope you and yours are doing well. Me and mine, Mom and Em and everybody, we all doing fine. Even the Princess Kimber, the Wonder Dog, who's quietly snoozing over here in her chair. We're all doing well and watching everything go by and shaking our heads, wondering how people can believe certain things. It's just amazing what people will believe. On the podcast today, we will be talking about some of those things that people believe, like Bernie Sanders and his belief in socialism. We'll be talking about the coronavirus and giving you a bit of an update on the coronavirus. And what else will we be talking about? Michael Bloomberg admitted something interesting. You've probably already seen this story, but I want to touch on it because there's an angle that I think needs to be explored. He's admitted to basically buying Congress, buying the House of Representatives for the Democrats. We'll see how that works out for him, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And what else is there? Oh, yeah, right off the top. Can I ask you a question? Let's just say you're making a sandwich. You're making, a bacon, lettuce, and tomato, a BLT. Maybe you're just making yourself a nice ham sandwich. You're spreading some condiments on the sandwich. You go in the fridge, you pull out the jars, you grab a knife, you spread things around, you put things on the bread, and then you chow down, right? Right. Most normal people will do it that way. Is spreading mayonnaise on the bread too much? I mean, is it just too much? Does it just wear you out? Do you have to have a timeout after you've spread the mayonnaise? Because, doggone it, that's just, whew, wow. I wish somebody would invent mayonnaise that's packaged so you can just lay it on there like those Kraft single slices. Well, do I have good news for you? If you're tired of having to open that darn jar, if you've got to have help getting the mayonnaise jar open and you're just sick of it, there is now a better way. Scientists who just really hated the boring work involved in curing cancer have come up with a new sliceable mayonnaise. You know what that means? It's an end to the drudgery of making an unnecessarily fattening sandwich. You don't even need to change out of your sweatpants. A Japanese food company called Bourbon. No, they don't make corn mash. They've come out with a new line of mayonnaise in slices, like a slice of Kraft cheese. It's been dubbed a sheet-like condiment by the company. It comes in two really horrible-sounding flavors, which are a tuna mayonnaise sheet and a mayonnaise and mentaiko slice. Mentaiko is a spicy cod roe. Yes, fish eggs. Spicy fish eggs flavored mayonnaise. Ooh, baby. Bourbon says they're particularly happy in the morning since they're handy, since you can slap a slice down on a piece of bread, stick it in the toaster oven, and you have a hot, tasty breakfast with just seconds of prep time. As long as you want tuna or fish eggs on your toast for breakfast. Everybody knows there's nothing quite like a nice slice of toast covered with spicy codfish eggs for breakfast. And the folks at Sora say, if you are feeling, that's a Sora news service, if you're feeling fancy, you can add sliced tomatoes, lettuce leaves, other veggies for some extra nutrition and color. Now, mayo, I don't know if you know this or not, but mayonnaise is big in Japan. You know, I told you the other day, I've been watching these videos by this group called Tokyo Creative, and they do kind of tourism videos, all these different places you can go to and things to look for, and look for this little tiny restaurant in this town and make sure you try this and order that. And here's the truth about what an onsen is. I'll just let you look up an onsen, O-N-S-E-N, onsen, and things like that. I've been watching these videos, and one of the things that's come out in the time I've been watching these videos is the people of Japan have got a hankering for some mayonnaise. They really do. No, their version of mayonnaise, at least. A brand called Kewpie is very popular in Japan, according to Food and Wine magazine. So it's no surprise that they're celebrating with mayo cafes. Mayo cafes in Tokyo and Nagoya. At the cafes, consumers can gaze adoringly at Kewpie bottles strung from broccoli trees while noshing on veggies smothered in limited edition Kewpie olive, basil, or tomato-flavored mayo. This is at least the second year this mayo has been so revered in pop-up cafes throughout the country. Why does Kewpie inspire such devotion? Well, the answer is actually kind of simple. It contains MSG. As chef and Momofuku founder David Chang once told Food and Wine, Kewpie is the best mayonnaise in the world because it has MSG. Kewpie is a bit different than American mayo. It's made only with egg yolks, not whole eggs, and with rice or apple vinegar and no added salt or sugar. It's bottled in a slim, red, and clear container with an emblematic baby for the logo. The real secret to Kewpie's cult following is a healthy dose of, yeah, you got it, MSG. The Japanese love mayo so much, they even make mayonnaise pudding and mayonnaise ice cream bars. Sora reports last year, Calorie Monster Cheerio creamy mayonnaise flavor boasted a complex of mix of cookie, white chocolate, and mayonnaise that might just be sweet and eggy enough to work. Ugh. The 300-calorie treat has a white chocolate center that's surrounded by mayonnaise-flavored ice cream, then encased in a shell of white chocolate and cookie crumbs. Holy cow. I knew the people of Japan were crazy about mayonnaise. I didn't know it was this big. I honestly didn't. Sliceable mayo. You're thinking, okay, when are they coming out with sliceable ketchup? Did that last year. Yep. A Kickstarter campaign funded it. Bose Fine Foods created a thing they call a slice of sauce. It's an all-natural, no-mess slice of ketchup. And if you're wondering about sliceable mustard, been around since 2012. Yep. Mustard, ketchup, and mayo are now all available in slices you can put on a sandwich. Yeah. And that's all great. I mean, you got a sandwich or a burger. Okay, I see that. But what do you do with, I don't know, like a hot dog? Can you put sliced... you put sliced mustard on a hot dog? I don't think that's going to go over big at a ball game. Just hand me the squeeze bottle or point me to the pump. That's what I want. I'll be fine with that. Mayonnaise. Mayonnaise with salmon flavor or spicy fish eggs. Just between you and me, I think I'll take a pass on that. I know. Not for me. I'm going to avoid that one. Thank you very much. We won't be partaking in the slices of mayo, the Japanese style stuff. I am, however, a bit intrigued with the Kewpie mayo brand. I have seen some of these videos where people, they'll see the Kewpie on the shelf or they'll see it in a convenience store or something and they will excitedly point, oh, look, Kewpie. And I'm like, what's the big deal? Well, now I know the big deal. It's the MSG. People are getting hooked on it. It's like when you go for Chinese, they load it down. There's so much MSG. You're wondering, what makes this taste so good? It's the MSG. There's an old John Panette routine. John Panette, the comedian, who unfortunately a few years ago passed away. He's talking about the Chinese buffet. And you've probably heard the routine and you're just not aware of it, where the owner finally gets fed up with him being there, he and his other large mammal friends being at the buffet and going back again and again and again. And he comes out and shouts at them, "You go now!" So you've been here 4 hours. Well, he says at one point he started to get sleepy, and he figured out why. It was the manager had loaded everything up with lots of MSG, trying to knock him out and get him out of there. Oh my word! MSG and salmon and fish eggs in the mayonnaise. No thanks. No thank you. I'm not going to lie. I've told you I want to go to Japan. Everything I've seen about the place, it's a beautiful country. I want to see it. I'd like to experience the bustle, the hustle and bustle of Tokyo, and see the beautiful countryside, and see with my own eyes Mount Fuji and places like that. And there are other places in the world I want to go as well, but I don't think I'll be partaking of the sliced mayonnaise with the spicy fish eggs. No, thank you. I will not take another. Oh, man. Yikes. But not right now. I don't want to be traveling right now anyway, because of what's happening with the coronavirus. And I've told you this a couple of times. We've had trip plans. We've had travel plans. We've put them all on hold because of an illness in the family. But when that is back under control again, we're still a little bit nervous about it because of the coronavirus. But the more I read and the farther into its existence we get, the less concerned I actually am about it. I still don't want to present myself to anyone who has it. I don't want to take the chance of getting it. And I think you probably feel the same way. But I'm not nearly as concerned about the consequences of catching it as I used to be, because we're finding out so much. Just Facts Daily over at justfactsdaily.com, they have a quiz, the question of the day, which says, as of February 24th, how many deaths from coronavirus have been reported in the United States, here in the U.S.? How many? Since you are an informed person, because informed people listen to this podcast, you probably already know the answer to that. But let's run through the possibilities. Is it zero, between 1 and 100, or is it more than 100 deaths? As of February 24th, how many deaths from coronavirus have been reported in the United States of America? Your answer is zero. Per a February 24th report on coronavirus by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 14 cases have been diagnosed in the United States, in addition to 39 cases among repatriated persons from high-risk settings, for a current total of 53 cases within the U.S. Now, there was one that's just been found in California that has no contact that they know of with anybody who has been to Wuhan, to any of the high-risk areas. I have a feeling when we get to the bottom of that, we'll find out there actually was some contact at some place. They did cross paths with somebody who was exposed in those areas. I think we'll probably find that out. There have been 2,462 associated deaths worldwide, but no deaths reported in the United States. Now, in comparison, an average of 37,000 people per year in the United States over the past 9 years, as an average, over 37,000 people per year have died from the flu. 70,000 died in 2017 alone from drug overdoses. So we're talking about right now almost 2,500 deaths associated worldwide. But in 2017 alone, just in the United States, 70,000 people died from drug ODs. And over the past 9 years, there's an average of 37,000 people per year dying from the flu. So far, indications are that the coronavirus is not the monster the press is making it out to be. And that's one of the things that we'll get into on the podcast today. That the coronavirus has indeed been weaponized, but not necessarily in a biological weapons lab somewhere in Wuhan, China. It looks like the coronavirus is being weaponized by the progressive left as a way to attack President Trump. It's becoming more and more apparent that that's what's going on here, because the reporting is very lopsided, it's very sloppy, and it's all very sensationalism driven, as reporting always is in the leftist press. We've talked about that before. But we'll get more into that after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues on this Thursday, the 27th of February.
This helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, chew.
We're always here to help. It is the Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast, the 27th day of February. No, tomorrow's not the end. It's leap year. There's one more day this year. So Saturday will be the end of the month. And what else we got here? We were talking about coronavirus, and I've got a couple of articles I want to pass along. First up, there's been this thing running around social media. You've probably seen it. Your progressive slash liberal leftist friends on social media are probably passing around this hysterical, this in hysterics, in just how could he do this? This idiot, this moron, this... And, of course, they're picking at Trump, and they are saying that President Trump fired the government's pandemic specialist and defunded the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC. You saw that from the debate stage the other night, in fact. Actually, more than one of the candidates on the debate stage made this assertion that the government's pandemic specialist was fired and the CDC was defunded. The CDC actually has more funding now than it did during the Obama administration. Let's just make that clear. The verdict on this is it's mostly false. The specialist quit. He was not fired. We've had some things happen in this administration when deep staters, when progressives who were still in the mix come under pressure. They, in their little effort to speak truth to power, they pick up their toys and go home. And that's probably what's happened here. Some cuts to the CDC were presented, but they were not implemented. So basically, this is a lie. It's not even just mostly false. It's false totally, because the specialist was not fired. So that's a lie. The specialist quit, resigned. And the cuts which were presented were not implemented. And they're... Actually, as I said before, there's more funding now than there was under Obama. During the Democratic debates in Charleston, South Carolina, 2020 Democratic hopeful Michael Bloomberg claimed that Trump had fired the government's pandemic expert. He also continued to spew claims that Trump had defunded the Centers for Disease Control. Joe Biden, by the way, echoed that. He says, one of the great problems today, you read about the virus and what's really happening here is the president fired the pandemic specialist in this country 2 years ago, so there's nobody here to figure out what the hell we should be doing. Applause, applause, applause. And he's defunded Centers for Disease Control, CDC, so we don't have the organization we need. It's a bald-faced lie. Although the former New York City mayor made these claims, in reality, Timothy Zimmer, the pandemic expert, voluntarily left the National Security Council after then-National Security Advisor John Bolton was appointed. Bolton disbanded the unit that Zimmer was supervising as part of an effort to downsize the bloated NSC staff. The purpose of the unit, which had overseen the global fight against Ebola, had largely been fulfilled. It is true that Zimmer and his unit have not yet been replaced. The Trump administration has indeed proposed cuts to the CDC, but they have not been passed by Congress. So, this guy, this specialist, was working in a department that was basically redundant. It was no longer needed. And he quit. So Bloomberg and the rest who are making this claim are lying to you. It's all political. Now, that gets us back into coronavirus in general. The numbers are showing that coronavirus appears to be far less deadly than the flu. But government types and the media are promoting panic. Over at the Western Journal, there's a story by C. Douglas Golden. He says the city state of Singapore, population 5.6 million, has a face mask problem. Namely, there aren't enough of them to go around. Thanks to the COVID-19 virus, better known as the coronavirus, the tiny island right off the southern coast of the Malay Peninsula has had an issue keeping the masks in stock, along with hand sanitizer and other assorted items. The government ended up subsidizing masks so that every family could have them after people decided to hoard them like they were bottled water in a storm. Pharmacies reported massive shortages of both the masks and sanitizer. Never mind that these masks don't particularly work that well. I don't know if you know that, but if you're thinking you can just go get one of these little masks that hooks over your ears, they don't do the job. They won't keep the virus from entering your system because, honestly, the virus itself is smaller than the pores in the mask. It'll get right through. Singapore had, of this past weekend, 89 confirmed coronavirus cases. That means 0.002% of the population is infected. That's 0.002%. Keep in mind, too, that Singapore's government is much more open about its COVID-19 numbers than China is being. In other words, Spanish influenza, this isn't. At least Singapore is in Asia, the part of the world the vast majority of coronavirus cases are. The United States, meanwhile, is a huge country with 300-odd million people. We had 53 confirmed cases as of Tuesday, and we're all frightened out of our minds. This sort of thing sells newspapers and engenders clicks. He says, heck, the Western Journal has fallen into this trap as well. That's who he's writing for, by the way, in case you forgot. But it doesn't make us any safer, and it doesn't actually convey the scope of the disease in the United States. It also doesn't note that COVID-19, the coronavirus, is far less deadly than the flu in the United States. First, something from the Washington Post, which in a saner world would quell some of the hysteria. The report, published February 12, noted that the virus's destructive potential has overshadowed one encouraging aspect of this outbreak. So far, about 82% of the cases, including all 14 in the United States, have been mild, with symptoms that require little or no medical intervention. And that proportion may be an undercount. Health authorities managing the outbreak are trying to understand what the critical fact portends. Are the 60,000 sick people tallied so far just a portion of a vast reservoir of uncounted victims, some of whom may be spreading the disease? And do the mild illnesses reveal characteristics of the virus itself, something that could be useful in crafting a more effective response? But this is not a saner world. And if you're hopeful for a pandemic, then you don't really care about the facts. And that's the thing. The statistics show the flu is much more deadly. The flu is much more deadly than coronavirus. The coronavirus has thus far claimed zero lives in the United States. That's a 0% fatality rate, as we've already discussed. Compare that to the fatality rate for influenza, which is affecting far more people in the U.S. right now, with the Centers for Disease Control stating that 14,657 cases were identified during the week ending February 15th. That's just 1 week total. Between October 1st and February 15th, the CDC estimates there have been between 29 and 41 million cases of the flu in the United States, causing between 16 and 41,000 deaths. Remember, that the fatality rate in the U.S. from coronavirus is currently 0%. Which one is more deadly? Let's trot that thinking person emoji out. But in China, you say, the numbers are pretty dramatic, right? Well, not as much as you might think. Temple University math professor John Allen Paulus wrote in the New York Times on February 18th, "Constant on-the-nose reporting, however much it seems to serve transparency, has limitations too. It's a short-term and short-sighted approach that's difficult to resist, especially when people are afraid and the authorities are taking draconian actions. It's only natural to compare and contrast whatever hard facts are available, and yet it's especially dangerous to do that precisely because people are so anxious, and fear can trick the mind. As he pointed out, the death rate is determined by dividing the number of dead by the number of infected. However, that could be problematic. The number of deaths seems like it should be easy enough to determine. After all, dead is dead. And yet ascribing a cause of death can be tricky. The coronavirus might be blamed for the deaths of vulnerable people, especially seniors already suffering from other illnesses, such as diabetes and other chronic conditions. On the other hand, some deaths will be attributed to other illnesses that might more accurately be described as COVID-19. Even more problematic, figuring out the total number of infected people. Call that the mystery of the denominator, he says. He's a mathematician. Patients who've tested positive and are hospitalized are included in that tally, of course. But what about those who are being treated without formally having been tested? Or those who might be infected and yet display no symptoms? And that latter part is much more tricky. See, the thing is, the numbers don't support the hysteria. But the press lives on hysteria and sensationalism.
Sell crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here.
Oh, fine. I'll move along. You're listening to the Daily Perspective Podcast, the Thursday, February 27th edition. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host. Good to have you along. Hopefully you're having a terrific day. It is, it's the topic everybody's talking about. Everybody is freaking out about the coronavirus. And I've had my little freakouts about it too. I wouldn't say freak out. As I've said from the beginning, be wise. Remember, I said, actually the first day I talked about it, I said, remember how many deaths there have been from the flu in America? We're not seeing that trend happen with the coronavirus. And that's all holding true. Now, going back to the article from the Western Journal, let's go back to that. But without panic, how else can governments, particularly China's authoritarian communist government, keep accelerating their hold on power in this case? What will it accomplish? Nothing. Except maybe accelerating the sale of those ridiculous surgical masks. It won't help stop the spread of coronavirus. However, fear helps make government more powerful, and it keeps them looking like our savior. That's something it helps to remember in situations like this. And that takes me back to yesterday's press conference with President Trump yesterday afternoon. I watched it. I watched it up to a certain point. Because after a certain point, it was obvious the press didn't care about the facts. The press was digging for some sort of dirt. The press was looking for some way to weaponize this and make it a crisis. And somehow blame the president for not doing his job. Let's remember something very clearly here. President Trump, weeks ago, recommended closing travel from infected places. He secured $2.5 billion to deal with the situation. Of course, his opponents are all saying he's doing nothing and he hasn't asked for enough money. Well, if he had asked for $5 billion, they would have said, are you crazy? Are you power mad? What are you really going to do with the money? You're going to spend it on the wall, aren't you? That would have been the response. So, President Trump, as far as the left is concerned, whether it be the press or politicians, is in a no-win situation. And he very wisely is ignoring the no-win scenario. He's a lot like Captain Kirk with a Kobayashi Maru. Wow, did I just nerd myself out. Remember, I don't know if you remember that old story from the original Star Trek series, or actually from the, not from the first series, it's from the second movie. The Kobayashi Maru was a test at Starfleet Academy that nobody can pass. It's a no-win scenario. It's how to deal with defeat and death. And he said he rigged the computer program so that he could win. It was a unique solution. And he said, I don't believe in a no-win scenario. And I think, I really think that, that Donald Trump is much the same. I don't think he believes in a no-win scenario. And so all of these people who are trying to shove him into the no-win scenario just keep pushing and pushing and pushing, and he just keeps telling them the truth. And he keeps to the course. He steadies his hand on the till and keeps to the course. It's not going to change. He is going to keep doing what needs to be done. Remember, they said he fired the pandemic expert. They said he defunded the CDC. They were lying. And by the way, the guy on the stage who started that, Michael Bloomberg, my wife and I were watching some TV early this morning, watching the news early this morning, and we saw one of his ads roll by, which you can't watch TV without seeing Michael Bloomberg ads today. He's spent millions of dollars to make sure that's true. And I actually laughed out loud. And I looked at her. He was talking, the whole ad was about his response to 9/11. And I looked at Jane and I said, he wasn't even the mayor when that happened. It was Rudy Giuliani was the mayor when 9/11 happened. Rudy Giuliani's response was the one everybody was saying, wow, this guy is doing a great job. He'd be a great president. Do you remember that? I do. Bloomberg came along after Giuliani. He had no response to 9/11. He came in after Rudy Giuliani laid the groundwork for the city's recovery. And now he's taking credit for it. But that guy, Michael Bloomberg, stood on stage and lied to the world, telling them that President Trump had defunded the CDC and fired the pandemic expert. Lies, distortions, untruths. And that's what we can expect from Michael Bloomberg and the leftists who are running for president and the leftist press. Remember what I've said so many times, and that is that the news media, the leftist news media, thrives on sensationalism. They're trying to make this sensational. They have to in order to get people to watch. Why? Not because they want to help people, not because they have some noble cause, but because the bottom line dictates that they have as many viewers and listeners as possible. The mainstream press is funded by commercial activity. Ads online, ads in print, ads on the air. It's all advertising. Advertising prices, spot revenue, those prices, the rates are based on the numbers of viewers you have. The more viewers you have and the longer those viewers watch or listen to you or read your publication, the longer they stay involved, the more money you can charge. Which is why this explains, think about this, this explains why a news outlet which used to be trusted like CNN would talk about nothing but a Malaysian airliner for months. It seemed like every time you turned on the television, they were talking about a missing airliner. It was sensational. Somebody in charge said, stay focused on that. That's what people want to talk about. We've found out, we've looked at our numbers, and that's what's keeping people involved. And keeping people involved means they can charge more for their commercial time. And they make more money. Please, never fall for the lie that the press is a noble institution. speaking truth to power. The press is every bit as commercial, every bit as money hungry as those they condemn. If it weren't for the money, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing. You may be thinking, well, that's not true. What about places like NPR? NPR has to have money to operate. And they get a chunk of that money out of every one of your paychecks because the government takes your money and grants it to NPR along with other places, but the government is helping to fund them. They don't sell commercials, but they've got to have money to operate. Even NPR must have capitalism running in order to survive. They can't operate without cash. So it's all the bottom line. All of it is. And without that money, without capitalism, they don't exist. So please remember that when you're seeing the reports on the news about the coronavirus, there's a lot of sensationalism because sensationalism drives viewership numbers up. And when you see politicians talking about the coronavirus, watch the context because they're talking about it in context with what's being done by the current presidential administration and trying to paint the picture that whatever they're doing is not enough, that they're dropping the ball. And they will also focus on Wall Street. Wall Street is reacting. Wall Street always reacts. Always. The stock market always reacts when something happens. They've been talking a lot about how in the past couple of weeks, it's dropped over 1,000 points here, 1,000 points there. They're talking about the drop. Even with that drop, the stock market is higher than it was just a couple of years ago. It's always on the increase. There may be drops, but it's always going up. I challenge you today to do a little research and look at what the indexes were 5 years ago. Look at the numbers from 10 years ago and compare them to today. The stock market has far exceeded anything anyone ever thought it could. And along the way, it has also dropped. It will drop, it will fall, people will sell things off to prevent taking a loss if things go wrong, and then things will begin to recover. And it's influenced by news reporting and by politicians making crazy statements to the news media. The leftists in politics want the stock market to fall. They want to be able to blame Trump for losses. They want to be able to blame Trump for anything going wrong. They've failed at everything they have tried. And now they're trying to use a virus which isn't even harming as many people as the flu does to try to take President Trump down. I'm not saying not to be cautious or careful, but I am saying to be wise. Understand that what's driving the panic is politicians and the progressive press. That's what's driving the panic. And like I said, the reason they're driving the panic is that it's good for the bottom line. The leftists in the press may condemn capitalism, but without it, they can't pay the bills. And those talking heads on television, those hosts you see on the primetime shows, don't make the multi-million dollar salaries without that ad revenue. They may point fingers of disdain at people who make a lot of money who are conservative. But don't you for a second believe that they would be there if they weren't making a lot of money. And they're making a lot of money off of panic.
God bless America.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective, the Thursday edition. 27th day of the second month of 2020. Thank you so much for being there. I went off on the news media. I went off on the leftists in the press and in the and in politics. Because I honestly believe it's necessary. It's just necessary. The press and the leftist politicians are weaponizing a virus that's 98 that has a 98% survival rate. 98%, people. A 98% survival rate. More people die from the flu. You know what I haven't seen? I haven't seen the common cold. You know, I haven't seen the records on that. I wonder how many people die from the common cold every year. I bet there are some who do. I just haven't looked into it. But the thing is that it's something unknown, unrecognizable. China, typically the authoritarian state that it is over-responding, overreacting. And we're seeing lots of nasty news come out of there. But what's new about that? That's just the way life is in China. Welcome to it. China basically is Cuba with better PR. Pretty much. Oh, my word. And here in America, we've got leftist politicians trying to buy our country, trying to buy politicians and buy their way into prominence. And yeah, I'm talking about former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. You've probably seen the story by now that Bloomberg appeared to stop himself Tuesday at the debate from saying he bought the majority in the House of Representatives that was gained by the Democrats in the 2018 midterms. His remarks came during the presidential debate in Charleston, South Carolina. In the 2018 midterm elections, Democrats gained 40 seats in the House to seize the majority from the Republicans who had controlled the chamber since 2011. Bloomberg said, let's just go on the record. They talk about 40 Democrats. 21 of those were people that I spent $100 million to help elect. That number's accurate, according to the New York Times. The Times reported overall spending by Mr. Bloomberg and his organizations in the 2018 election topped $112 million, an amount that also includes donations to help Senate candidates and progressive organizations. All of the new Democrats that came in put Nancy Pelosi in charge and gave the Congress the ability to control this president. So said Bloomberg at the debate. Bloomberg then appeared to stop himself from saying the word bought when referring to those seats. He said, I got them. A lot of reaction on Twitter. Of course, social media erupted. Bloomberg, a billionaire, has spent hundreds of millions of dollars self-funding his presidential campaign. He's also spent much of his fortune advocating for gun control and government action on climate change. He's the guy behind the Every Town for Gun Safety, in case you've forgotten. Mm-hmm. This, as I see it, is one more reason for real, true campaign finance reforms. A progressive bought House seats to reinstate Pelosi and destroy Trump. Michael Bloomberg. He has publicly stated that his purpose for being in the race is not to win. His purpose for being in the race is to eliminate Trump, to get him out of the White House. He doesn't care if he wins or not. He's just going to throw as much money as possible at the campaign. Whether it be him or somebody else, his purpose is to spend his billions taking Trump down. Donations must be restricted to confirmed residents of the candidate's state of representation. Donations must be limited in the amount. There are already regulations, but there are ways around them. You just spread the money around. And donations must be verified as coming from the donor's personal funds and income. There has to be a way to do that. Otherwise, people like Michael Bloomberg will continue to donate to individuals and organizations in order to get that funding into the pockets of progressives and get them elected to Congress. This is just one more problem we have with the way politics in America operates. You hear the Democrats whining about campaign finance control. We need to have campaign finance controls. And when they whine about it, they're whining about wealthy people and corporations who are making donations to politicians they want to defeat. But they have people in their pockets, like Michael Bloomberg, a billionaire who is focused on destroying President Trump. Now, I've read that there's something personal going on in the background. I've read that the man just deeply dislikes, hates Donald Trump. I've read that. But it doesn't matter what his motivation is. The progressive politicians will take advantage of his hatred, and they will take every penny and pour it into the effort to control this country like they want to. Because you know what this is all about, what this all boils back down to. It all boils back down to
fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
When Obama said that in public to a screaming crowd, he revealed what the plan actually was on the progressive side of things. He said publicly what they have said privately for ages, that they want to transform your country into something besides the free representative republic that it is. They have lied to you. They have misled you. They have misrepresented what has happened in our country over the years. They have focused on everything bad that's ever happened and told you lies about this country to explain those bad things. But honest people will look back at our history and say, this was a terrible thing. It never should have happened. That was a terrible thing. It never should have happened. That was awesome. That was awful. It never should have happened. Those poor people suffered as a result of this. Native Americans, Japanese internment, again and again and again. The KKK, slavery, all of these things, the horrible things that the leftists want to blame this on this country and point to as evidence that it is built and rooted in racism and horrible, horrible ideology. Every one of those things was rooted in leftism. All of them. And yet, they misrepresent our history in order to make that claim. And fortunately, there is a remnant of people in this country who has studied history, who have looked into our past. And if you haven't, let me please recommend that you pick up Dinesh D'Souza's books and you read them. Let me recommend that you pick up historical writings that were published before the late 1800s. Because in the late 1800s, the progressives began to take over education. The progressives began taking over the publishing of history books. Go read the writings of the founders, the people who actually met and disagreed and clashed and compromised and crafted our Constitution. Read the Federalist Papers. I'll tell you right up front, they're not written in a way that's easy to read today. But if you'll give yourself a little time and focus, it all becomes very clear. These extremely wise, these learned, these brilliant people who crafted our founding document had seen the failure of what everyone on the left is trying to do to America today. They had seen it done before in other places. They had seen what happens when government has too much power. They had seen what happened when the people were disarmed. They had seen what happened when the people were kept at a distance and the government made all the decisions. And they crafted a form of government which prevented that. And from the beginning, there were always those who fought against it. And now those people who have been fighting against it for the entire history of our country are controlling education and brainwashing our children. And it's up to us to teach them the truth, which is why you should be reading the Federalist Papers. You should be grabbing Dinesh D'Souza's books. You should be looking at the works of other people. And you should be researching where this country actually came from and how it was founded and why it was done the way it was. Because people like Michael Bloomberg, people like Joe Biden, people like crazy Bernie Sanders can only exist in a vacuum where the truth is not known. It's up to you and me to fill that vacuum with the truth. So that's your homework. Teach yourself the truth about our nation's history. Teach yourself how things are supposed to work, and then take what you learn and pass it on to your loved ones so that they will know they live in the greatest country in the world, how great this nation is and how great it has been for the whole world, and that people like Bloomberg, Biden, and Bernie Sanders are lying, all for power and control. That's all for today. God bless you. Let's get back tomorrow for the Friday edition of The Daily Perspective. Have a good one. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.